Good evening, everyone. I'm Lenore Moudou. Welcome to Health Chat. Drug addiction is a chronic, often relapsing brain disease that causes compulsive drug seeking and use, despite harmful consequences to the drug addict and those around them. Drug abuse is often misunderstood by those who do not use drugs and the patients themselves. Many people do not understand why people become addicted to drugs. Drug abuse can lead to drug overdose, which is often fatal. International Overdose Awareness Day, IOAD, is coming up this Thursday. It's a global event held on August 31st each year that aims to raise awareness of overdose and reduce the stigma of a drug-related death. We will discuss drug abuse on today's show. Joining us via phone from New Jersey is Dr. Indra Sidembe, Medical Director of the Center for Network Therapy and a recognized leading expert and pioneer in the field of addiction medicine. Dr. Sidembe, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for giving me this opportunity to join your listeners today.
It's really good to have you with us. It's a topic that is very, very complex, and it's really important to discuss, and we are glad that you're taking the time to talk to us about it today. Joining us in the studio is Tahira Allen. Tahira is a university student, and she is here today to talk about her experience as she has seen and witnessed people close to her go through the challenges of drug addiction. Tahira, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
It's so good to take your time to talk to us, and I really appreciate your time. This is an experience that you've gone through. It's very recent. At least some of the consequences are very recent, and you are still coping with it. So I appreciate you being here to talk to us about it. Now, Dr. Sidembe, let me start with you and ask you to give us a sense of the problem of drug addiction, please, globally, in the United States and also globally. How much of a problem is it?
Drug addiction is a biggest problem. This is the hot topic now. It has been estimated that roughly 5% of the world's population used drugs at least once in 2015. Or roughly, you can say that 300 million people use drugs at least once in the 2015 year. This problem is more acute in the United States. Here we have about, I would say, 10% of the population over the age of 12, or roughly 25 million people who are using drugs in the past month. So the rate of the use in the United States will be twice that of the rest of the world, if that makes any, you know, impact. It's the drug use is number one issue in this country, in the United States, and the president has declared the national emergency. Mm-hmm. Regarding this opiate epidemic.
That's right. President Trump did declare national emergency on opioid. Now, when you talk about drug, when we talk about drug use and drug abuse, there is a need to make a distinction, because there is illegal substance abuse and then there is prescription drug abuse. Can you help us understand the difference?
All right. So anything that's been prescribed or which is legally available for the use, it's called the legal, you know, medication. But then anything which is illegal, like the street drugs, we call them illegal. And also the same medication for pain, like say Percocet, if it was prescribed by the doctor, that becomes legal. But then if the person goes to the streets and buys it from a drug dealer, then the same pill could be categorized as illegal drug. So I can definitely say that in the United States, prescription medications are a big factor in addiction. I would estimate like 58% of the overdose deaths are from prescription medication, mostly from the opiate pain pills and the anti-anxiety medication, which is the benzodiazepines that's been used to treat anxiety here. So that has been a brunt of the matter here. And I do see that around the world, you know, the rampage of this kind of addiction is catching up.
Wow. And Tahira, prescription medication is one of the issues that you experienced through friends when they were going through the problem. Can you tell us what happened with your friends?
Well, a big problem, like where you just differentiated between prescription and illegal, a lot of the doctors here in the United States have been over-prescribing medicine. Mm-hmm. And so one of my close friends, I have to say, like, the way that he got hooked on it was that all at one time, his doctor prescribed him Xanax, which is a benzodiazepine, and then methadone, which is what you give people to get off of heroin, and then also Valium, all at one time. Mm-hmm. And so when you're sitting here mixing all these drugs that one are supposed to be lethal, that's when he began to get his addiction. And then from there, he had to feed his addiction. And my biggest, I guess, time that I've had was with the benzos, with Xanax, and just watching somebody have to go through that, it gets to a point where it's not even fun anymore. Mm. And it escalates so quickly. Like, 1 week you're taking one Xanax, the next week you're taking two. And from there, it just goes up. And in his case, I at least have to say, he even went to his doctor and told him, like, hey, I need you to up my prescription. And that was, okay, fine, written off.
Really?
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Sidambi, Tahira, mm-hmm. She said some things that really ring a bell. When she started by saying doctors have been over-prescribing medicine. And it's something that I heard before, the fact that the responsibility of the doctor, where it seems like people are able to get prescription medicine very easily. How do you react to that? Where does the responsibility of the doctor is part of this big problem?
The real problem is, most times, when you look at the doctor's training, during our medical school, we don't get addiction adequate training to address addiction, mm-hmm. nor the pain issues. So one has to go through a specialized training in order to get these kind of skills. That's the main reason why doctors do not really understand when to prescribe and not to prescribe. By nature, any of these opiate pain pills are addictive, because once someone starts taking it, they develop tolerance to this medication and they need more to get the same effect. So when they start abusing those medications, the doctor tries to say, I will not prescribe this medication any longer for you to continue to use abusing it. So at that point, the patient ends up going and buying it from the streets. So I don't know, chicken or the egg story. Is it the doctor to be blamed, or is it the nature of the pills, or is it the big pharma, So it's such a complicated web. Basically, what needs to be done is to really bring awareness to the treaters and the consumers, in this case, the patients who are using this kind of medications to address anxiety and pain. They need to be fully aware of the nature of these pills. Like Tahira said, she brought a very valid point today, saying that her friend started off with one pill of Xanax and continued to keep increasing it, and also mixing with other kinds of, Xanaxes from the same group, like Xanax and then Klonopin, So they keep Valium, and so they keep adding more and more because the medication is not enough to address that anxiety.
Mm. But when you are in the position like Tahira, and let me ask you this directly, what was going through your mind? I mean, when you look at your friend going through addiction and you almost feel like powerless, what is going through your mind? What are you hoping for? What are you hoping that could happen, at least whether it's you knowing and being able to do something, or the doctor doing something, or even your friend doing something?
You just hit it spot on. It is the most hopeless feeling that I think I've ever had, just because, especially when addiction gets to a point, like, really, really not even fun anymore, I'm looking at this person, and they are helpless, too. Mm-hmm. And it's to a point to where people look down on you. Like, you do not want to be taking this drug, but you physically feel like you have to. But if you were to go to a friend or tell a friend about it, it's almost like you're a junkie. And I have also experienced, too, where, I mean, this kid was 22 when it was like he had been weaning himself down and just could not get off the last bit of it without help. And but when he's looking at it, like considering, okay, going to rehab, he's thinking, I have to put my life on hold. Like, all my friends are graduating college, getting a job, like starting an actual life, and I have to go to rehab for 6 months. So that was a big factor. And then also, they have outpatient facilities. And I remember he told me this hurt him so bad because he finally mustered up the courage to actually go to an outpatient facility and see if he could get help like that. And the doctor told him, like, we physically can't take you. You are too much of a liability for the doctor. And so that just knocked him down, like, one more. That made him feel like he was low. That made him feel like he was a junkie, like he was worth nothing. And it finally took, like, hitting rock bottom to go to rehab. And to this day, he still copes with it, and his life is set back. Like, he is not graduated from college. He's not. He feels even more like a loser now.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's also coping with being off of drugs.
Wow. Well,
I can jump in and address this to Hira. You know, it's a very important thing that you brought to the table, like saying that putting life on hold to go to rehab for 6 months, you don't have to do it anymore. When you talked about outpatient facilities, you're talking about the intensive outpatient treatment, and they say that, your friend was physically too much to handle, and that was a lot of liability because it is an outpatient after the detox. So now I've been, I introduced a newer model, which is an outpatient detox. So the rehab, detox, everything is an outpatient, meaning one can continue to live, start keeping the life in order while they're getting treatment. They come in to the center and go back to their house and get cleansed in the same environment where they've started using. So this is the ambulatory detox. This is a newer model in New Jersey. I'm the first one who introduced this model. And it really helps people who are working and as a student, they don't get to miss out on real life just because they have this addiction and they need treatment. Oh, that is one thing I wanted to educate, but not many people get to hear about this. Even more, like, you know, you again nailed it, saying that your friend, even though he stopped using, does not feel good, feels bad because has not been successful in life, not being able to complete in school or have a job. That's because kind of taking yourself out of day-to-day life and going away to an inpatient rehab facility for 6 months, that means you're missing out on those days with the family, with the obligation that you have in life. So it's not good model to isolate yourself from the real life and put yourself in a bubble in order to get better. So this ambulatory model really helps people balance both worlds, the treatment model and handling the life simultaneously. And so that way, when they get the stabilization from the addiction, they don't feel like they have nothing to look forward to, because that is a vicious cycle that will push the person to go back to addiction.
And this model, it's something that you created. Is how much is it being used out there? Is it still in the trial phase, or is it being implemented in different places?
It is. I started this model, ambulatory detox, 4 years ago, and I did face ton load of resistance because every treater out there was thinking this model is not going to be successful. Now it is 4 years, and I did not have any single loss of life. When the crisis is happening, we didn't have any overdose and death, nor do people have face any seizures while they're going through detox. So this model has been pretty successful, cost-effective, you know, half the price of what it takes to go to an inpatient per day. And then it is also highly effective, meaning our success rate is between 65 to 70% of our patients remain sober for at least 90 days or even more. So I think this is the futuristic model, and slowly I do see that resistance has been lifted, and so many, you know, players are wanting to get into this model, and they want to, like, really look into this kind of ambulatory detoxes, at least in the state of New Jersey. I don't know about other places in the country. I would say this is not in the primitive stage, nor is it in the experimental stage. It is already up and about. And so we need to let the addicts suffering to get the treatment know about such model and the existence of this model.
And Tahira has a question for you, Dr. Sidambi.
Sure.
For that model, is that available to all levels of addiction? Like, say, the person that I'm talking about, like, at the height was taking 120 bars in 3 days.
No problem at all. Being an addiction psychiatrist, I have seen quite a bit of psychiatric issues along with medical problems, and doing 50 bags of heroin and taking Valium and also, like, mixing it with cocaine. And, you know, so I've seen it all. And these kind of issues can be addressed at this level of care. As long as we have the nurses and the doctor on board, we can. And if there is a necessity, we'll always send them to an emergency room. But to be open and honest, we did not have those kind of needs. You know, so most addicts are young people within the good medical health, and we are able to, 50% of those people who need detox can be detoxed at this level of care.
Mm, that sounds great.
Yeah, there is hope, and, you know, Tahira, that's what I wanted to say. And what you brought to the table today is very important, saying that taking the time, luxury, to get away from day-to-day life, escape, and then come back to where they left their life is not an easy thing to do. It's not like they can go away for 6 months or a year and then come back and think everything else will fall in place. That's not going to happen.
Okay.
Addiction is a chronic disease, and it should be treated like any other chronic disease. We are not asking people with cancer to go away for 6 months or a year and, you know, into a rehab and then come back into life.
Okay.
That's important.
There are so many interesting things and important things that we are discussing. We are going to take a very short break, and when we come back, we'll go further into this discussion, because addiction and drug abuse, it's such a critical problem. We're talking to Dr. Indra Sidambi and Tahira Hallen. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the show. If you're just joining us, we are talking about drug abuse today. And now a new report finds a significant rise in the number of women dying from drug overdose globally, while fewer women than men receive treatment for their addiction and are more severely punished for drug taking. VOA's reporter Lisa Schlein has the story.
The report finds governments do not pay enough attention to the huge and growing problem of drug abuse among women. The International Narcotics Control Board, which monitors implementation of UN international drug control treaties, says women get short shrift when it comes to the enactment of gender-sensitive policies. INCB President Werner Sipp tells VOA one-third of global drug users are women, but only one-fifth receive treatment. He says there tends to be a gender bias against women, as they often are punished more harshly for drug-related offenses than men.
We know that women are significantly more likely than men to be prescribed narcotics and anti-anxiety medications. Or we see that women are increasingly being arrested for for drug-related crimes in some regions much more than men. They have even a disproportionate increase in drug overdoses.
The report notes HIV infections and mental health disorders are more prevalent among women who abuse drugs. It warns locking women up for drug crimes has a serious and detrimental impact on them and on their children and families. SIP says drug abuse is a problem in both rich and poor countries, though data in African and Asian countries is scant. He adds women drug abusers are likely to have greater difficulty receiving the treatment they need in developing countries.
I think in Africa the stigma which women have to face is probably greater than, for instance, in Europe or in the U.S. A woman who is addicted does not dare confess to show that she is addicted because this might lead to very, very bad consequences in her community or in the society in general.
The report calls for alternative measures to punishment and conviction for minor drug crimes among women. It recommends more investment in treatment and rehabilitation programs, education, and social integration. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And Dr. Sidambi, again, thank you for joining us. And you heard this report. I wanted your reaction just in general when we look at addressing drug abuse and gender bias, as the report refers to. What is your reaction? Is this a reality?
This is a reality. Gender addiction gap is shrinking. Women are catching up with men in terms of abusing drugs. And I would say the reason why gender matters when it comes to recovery is because biology predisposes women to become addicted faster. The woman's body contains less water than men, which means drugs and alcohol in their system are less diluted, more fatty tissues, higher retention, and so lower levels of specific enzymes in them will make the drug or alcohol slow to break down pretty slowly. So as a result, women can become they can progress faster to become an addict than men. So also, childhood sexual abuse can be a factor among women, and more access to addictive medication acts as a gateway because women are likely to seek medication or self-medicate for their emotional or psychological issues. They might be anxious, depressed, borderline personality, eating disorders, and all these things commonly affect women. And these women go for treatment and have an access to prescription medication. That could be pretty, addictive. And also, women go through quite a bit of stress related to the family responsibility and the body image management that they bring to the table. So women can easily get addicted to these medications. So drug use sometimes helps bonding with their partner. If the boyfriend or the husband is drinking or drugging, women will be able to pick up the same drug or alcohol to bond with that person. Mm. So the significant partner, and they can introduce drugs to the women, the easy access and like sharing the needles, and that becomes a cement. That becomes a way to cement with these kind of bonds among the family members. So I think, the report was pretty accurate about what it was addressing. Gender is a huge thing, and not punishing the women and or the men. You know, addicts don't need to be penalized. They need to be helped. More treatment is the way to go.
Yeah. And I guess a lot of time people don't even understand what it is to be addicted. So they think that drug users, there is a stigma that comes with people that are abusing drugs from other people. Perhaps a lot of time it's misunderstanding. And one of the population that is also seems to be vulnerable is the youth. I know in one of your answers, Dr. Sidambi, you talked about how much the youth was affected. And Tahira, I wanted you to come to talk about it, and then Dr. Sidambi can react. Tell us, as a young woman, you are on university campus, you go to school. What is the culture around drug use among the youth?
Especially going to a large university, I would completely 100% say it is a drug culture. It does not matter. It's really just your drug of choice. Like how Dr. Zayambi, you said that even women, a body image. I have friends that are prescribed Adderall for focusing, but they take it so that way they don't have to eat all day. Mm-hmm. I have friends that will, when you go out to a party, you're with your boyfriend. I can even say, from my personal experience, I have taken Xanax before because my boyfriend was taking Xanax. And so I just happened to not like it and didn't get addicted. But it is definitely a drug culture. It is just really your choice. Even alcohol is a drug. And on campus, everybody is mixing everything. It's like the thing to do. It's not even looked at differently. It's just accepted. And I would have to say that even goes all the way into not just college, like 30s. Being from visiting Europe so much as well, I've even seen it there. It's common. You're at a party and people just bring everything out, and it's almost not even a peer pressure thing. It can either be your friends, it can be those around you, it can be the fact that you want to be on the same level as everybody else. It can be a body issue thing. There are so many substances out there that it's really just whatever you choose to do. And some people look at others differently. Like, say you drink alcohol every day, like morning, day, and night. But no, that's not illegal, so people don't really look at you bad. But you take Adderall that you're prescribed, but you're taking it because you don't want to eat. Like, it's really just
it's really crazy. Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's very crazy. Dr. Zayambi, I'm sorry to say this, but it just leaves me speechless to see what is happening among the youth. How do we address that? First of all, let me have your reaction on this. And what do we do, really?
Tahira is, like, really bringing in the real picture about the kids in college. I think the reason why these kids, when they go to college, experiment all these drugs is because they have the independence now. The parents do not get to see them that often, and they only come home 3 or 4 times a year. So living independently brings these chances for the adult children mature during this phase. And then that's when they're making their own decisions. And once they start making decisions for their own good and bad acts, and they slip into addiction because of the stress that now that they are in college and they have to cope up with the stress that they need to face, and also being cool in their group, being accepted by the peers. So that makes it also quite a vulnerable state for them to tap on drugs. So it is an ongoing issue, and Tahira did talk about the body image, and also people use Adderall quite frequently to be able to study.
And what blows my mind, I don't think maybe adults understand how easy it is to get. I have a solid 5 people I could call to get anything, whether it be prescription pills, whether it be acid, whether it be shrooms, whether it be Adderall. I have people that sell this. Like, it's not just one person. If one person doesn't have it, you can call the next person. Literally every other kid is a drug dealer in college. One, because it makes them a ton of money. I mean, I have a friend that made $30,000 last year selling drugs.
Doesn't surprise me at all.
So, and then at the same time, he's the dealer, so he has enough supply to take it himself.
Wow.
So I really don't think people understand how easily available it is as well.
It's unfortunate we're running out of time. Quickly, Dr. Zayambi, I'll let you have the final words in 20 seconds. Where do we leave things on this broadcast? What next? What do we do?
We need to, first of all, help reduce stigma. We need to be supportive, make sure that the loved ones know what to emphasize on, and then provide inspiration to ask for help and be able to sustain sobriety. And we have to host an event to do the preventive skills.
Okay.
Yeah, that will be the majority of work.
Dr. Zayambi, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate your time. Tahira, thank you. And I'm your host, Lino Mudu in Washington, with producer Jackson Vanganyi. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.